Hello and welcome to another episode of By the Horns. Today I spoke to Cole, a local Bitcoiner, content creator, and educator. If you're in the market for a hardware wallet and are trying to decide which one to choose, then this episode is for you. We did a deep dive into a few different hardware wallets that are available on the market today, discussing the pros and cons of each one. We evaluated the Cole Card, Seed Signer, Blockstream Jade, Bitbox, and Ledger devices. Hopefully this episode will provide you with some clarity of which hardware wallet is best suited for you. But before we get into today's discussion, here's a word from our sponsor, Bitcoin Only. Have you ever tried to import a hardware wallet into South Africa? If you have, then you know it's a slow and expensive process with many hidden costs and risks, like the post office losing your package. But I'd like to tell you about my new company, Bitcoin Only. Bitcoin Only is your one-stop shop for all high-quality Bitcoin hardware wallets in South Africa. We stock Blockstream Jades, Cold Cards, Seed Signers, and more. We also offer Bitcoin consultations if you need any advice on your self-custody solution, or would like to set up a Bitcoin will so that your family can get hold of your Bitcoin if something unexpected happens to you. Head over to bitcoinonly.io and apply the code BTC at checkout to get a discount on your next purchase. That's bitcoinonly.io, Bitcoin for the sovereign individual. Cape Town is getting its first Bitcoin conference. From the 26th to the 28th of January 2024, the Adopting Bitcoin Cape Town Conference is taking place at the Cape Town International Convention Center. The theme for this conference is one that I think is extremely interesting, and it's all about parallel institutions and Bitcoin. Now, most South Africans know about the likes of the AfriForum, Saqaliga, the IRR, and Solidaritate. These are parallel institutions that for the past few decades have been filling the vacuum left by government incompetence. Bitcoiners are building the parallel institution of money, so this conference aims to bring these two groups together to discuss ideas and learn from each other. No parallel institution can function without the ability to transact, and Bitcoin can't function without motivated individuals building the foundations of the new parallel economy. This makes these two groups natural allies. If you want to be part of what is going to be an extremely interesting conference taking place in the most beautiful city on earth, grab yourself a ticket today. There's only going to be 350 of them, so get one before they're gone. Click the link in the description to get yourself a ticket and be part of history being made. That's Adopting Bitcoin Cape Town from the 26th to the 28th of January 2024. See you there. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to By the Horns, a Bitcoin podcast about South Africa. And today I'm joined by Cole, otherwise known as Southern Bitcoiner, otherwise also known as Cole, Bitcoin educator from South Africa. Cole, welcome to the show, man. Good to have you here.
Sweet. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, man. You've been a busy little bee lately, haven't you? Putting out lots of content, reviewing lots of people's different hardware wallets. I love it. It's your content's gaining traction. It's great to see, man.
Exactly, yeah. Twitter's been very good to me recently, so things have been doing very well on Twitter. And yeah, pumping out a lot of content out there.
Great, man. Yeah, producing content's tough, eh? It's people see a video and they think it's just you in front of a camera, but editing is a tedious process, and like, you know, curating all that content really takes a lot of time. So, and it's not something you can just start with and you get overnight success, right? This is it's a long-term project. It takes a long time to gain traction. So well done to you, man. And the content you're producing is great. It's very much needed. So I think you find yourself a good niche there.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, people don't see that there's actually a few hours behind the scenes, and at the end, all you get is a 3-minute video. So
yeah,
there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, a lot of trial and error as well, figuring out what works and what doesn't. And yeah, you only see the final product.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then obviously all the research and expertise and know-how that's got you to this point, right? Like that's also, exactly, that's like thousands of hours of work.
Yeah, the scripts, I probably script a video 5 or 6 times then before I've got one that actually I like. So I'll you know, do a few different things for different ways of phrasing it. Then I'll pick the best one, which does take a lot of hours of research. Thank God for ChatGPT. That makes things a lot quicker. So thank you. What's that guy's name?
Thank you, Skynet. Sam.
Yeah, Skynet guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, ChatGPT does help a lot there, especially for summarizing information. It's super handy. Even though you got to be super wary of it, though, because often the information is biased. And sometimes it's like someone who says something with enough conviction. It just, you're like, oh, it sounds true because they say it with enough confidence. That's what ChatGPT does a lot. Like, it just like gives you an answer and you're like, that's incorrect. And then it's like, oh, yes, it is. ChatGPT is like, sorry, you caught me in the lie.
especially with Bitcoin stuff. It's not the best with Bitcoin only kind of questions. Doesn't really often feed you the correct information. But for this recent video I did, it was explaining how secure 24 words are. So it's like picking one grain of sand, then picking one star in the observable universe, then picking one cell in the average human body, then a centimeter squared on Earth 4,000 times in a row. So that's how secure a 24-word seed phrase is. And all those numbers were help. I got a lot of help from ChatGPT doing that math and getting all those figures. And then, of course, you have to check other sources. So Google it as well. Make sure it's feeding you the correct info. Then run the numbers yourself on a whiteboard like this one. And then, but it makes things a lot quicker.
Yeah, definitely. So the type of content you're producing, like what is it overall for people who haven't seen your content yet? What is it that you're going for? Like what's the aim of what you're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, so I had this idea to make content that is a lot more short and sweet and to the point, very concise, because I've seen with my generation, I'm sure other generations are suffering from this as well, but short, the word has slipped my mind, but you can't focus for long. Short-term focus or something. I've forgotten the word.
Like ADD.
Yeah. So it's a 1 minute video. If it doesn't grab your attention within 5 seconds, next video. If that doesn't grab your attention within 5 seconds, next. So people in my generation, I don't think they have time to watch these. Well, they do have time. They don't have the attention span to watch a hour long video. So I thought, let me put together these super simple, short and sweet videos that are 2 to 3 minutes long. That's what's going on Twitter now. And you just...
Are you basically the Andreas Antonopoulos for TikTok? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't actually put anything on TikTok. I don't have one. But for Twitter, yeah. And also hardware videos. I mean, if there's a hardware wallet video, you'd rather watch the 15-minute one than the hour-long one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like I'm often researching stuff and, you know, if you building your own company, you've got to do everything, right? So you've got to learn about all these aspects. So one of the things I got stuck on recently was on like DNS settings. What are DNS settings? How do they work? So you go onto YouTube and that's like the primary place to find this information. And you're absolutely right. If you find an hour video or if you find a 2 minute video, you're going to watch the 2 minute video because you're like, listen, time is money here. I can't afford to spend 3 days on this problem. I need to solve it ASAP. So it's like, I want to get the answers as quickly as possible. And it's such a skill being able to summarize really dense amounts of information into like a 2 minute or 3 minute clip. And that's what people are after. And also you are right. Like people's attention spans have been ruined by social media. So that's the kind of like the content they want to consume anyway. So yeah, I think you're nailing it there. So the type of content you've been focusing on, is it relating just to Bitcoin in general, or are you focusing on certain aspects of Bitcoin, or like what themes are you going after?
Yeah, mainly anything related to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, anything. But I if you look at all my content, most of it is about securing Bitcoin. So hardware wallets. How secure is 24 words, how do hardware wallets work, how to verify Sparrow wallet, things like that. So I think I've focused on security, but in the future that will probably change. I'm going to broaden it up and speak about a lot more different things.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into what we're going to discuss today. So I got you on here because I want to talk about hardware wallets and specifically why should people use hardware wallets? What are hardware wallets? What types of hardware wallets should people be looking at? What are the good ones? What are the shit ones? And what are the expensive ones? And what are the ones that are good value for money? So I think a good starting point is why would you use a hardware wallet over just a software wallet on your phone or on your PC?
Yeah. So there are two types of wallets. There's a hot wallet and a cold wallet, or a software wallet and a hardware wallet. And a software wallet is on your phone or on your computer. And the problem with that is that it's on an internet connected device. And you want to put your Bitcoin somewhere where it's hard for hackers to access. So that's where hardware wallets come into play. And hardware wallets secure your Bitcoin offline rather than storing it on a phone or on an internet connected device. So basically the reason you would need a hardware wallet is to secure your Bitcoin in an offline environment it's harder for hackers to access your keys, which ultimately is your Bitcoin. The keys that can spend your Bitcoin represent your Bitcoin, basically.
Right. So this is probably a good point then to ask the question, how does a hardware wallet secure your Bitcoin? You just mentioned your private keys living on a hardware wallet. People have this notion when you think of a hardware wallet that your Bitcoin actually lives on that device. And that's not strictly speaking true. Do you mind explaining to people actually how a hardware wallet functions?
Yeah, so yeah, that's exactly right. Hardware wallets never actually store any Bitcoin. Bitcoin isn't a physical thing that can be stored. Bitcoin is digital money. So instead, your hardware wallet stores a set of keys that are needed to spend your Bitcoin. So there are two types of keys. There's a public key and a private key. The public key is used to receive Bitcoin, and the private key is used to spend Bitcoin. So anyone with that private key I just mentioned can spend your Bitcoin and has access to your Bitcoin and can steal it or hack it or whatever it may be. So the hardware wallet, it takes that private key and generates it and stores it offline. And this private key, you can think of it as like a super secure password that represents your right to spend your coins. Anyone with that password has your coins. So storing it offline keeps it away from where hackers could access it. And whenever you want to spend, these keys are needed to sign off on a transaction, and your hardware wallet does that offline as well. So basically, all operations involving the private key are moved in an offline environment. So yeah, that's basically how your hardware wallet actually works behind the scenes.
So if I keep my Bitcoin on a software wallet on my phone, the risk there is much greater than on a hardware wallet because my phone is permanently connected to the internet. And that means there's like this attack vector for hackers to gain access to my coins, right? Because my private keys are effectively kept on that app on my phone, and that has access to the internet, and there's a way for them to get in, right?
Yeah. Software wallet hacks don't happen as often as people think. They're quite rare, but they do happen. And it's far easier for a hacker to attack you if your keys are online. So yeah, because they're online, it's easier for an attacker to gain access to that. And they're stored offline, stored online. And because they're online, they could be stored, you know, if someone gains access to your phone, that's access to your keys. And I think some of them stored on the cloud, I'm not really sure. And if you use weak passwords on your cloud storage and someone gains access to that, your Bitcoin's gone. So yeah, storing it offline is a lot safer.
It's a very important point you raised there about how often software wallets get hacked, and which is not very often at all. And I think it's important for people to realize that the least secure place for your Bitcoin is an exchange. Like they, by orders of magnitude, are less safe than a software wallet. They get hacked all the time. I mean, it's kind of like a case of when, not if, for your local exchange to get hacked, because they all seem to get hacked at some point. And that's just because they've got such big security threats. They're such a honeypot, like people are always going after them. Whereas a software wallet on your phone the hackers have to target you specifically. They don't know how much Bitcoin you've got to start with. So is it worthwhile expending all these resources going after you? And often a software wallet stores or encrypts your private keys on the secure element on the phone itself, is my understanding with some of them. So it's not like software wallets are super insecure. It's just that relative to hardware wallets, they are insecure because hardware wallets like never touch the internet. But so I think if there's any takeaway for anyone from this discussion is that like get your coins off the exchange. Like that's just a nightmare waiting to happen. And if you get them onto a software wallet, or if you get them onto a hardware wallet, that's already like a massive improvement versus just being on an exchange. But all that being said, hardware wallets are obviously far more secure because they never touch the internet, but not all hardware wallets are created equal, right? Like they're not just all the same thing. Yeah. So I think in this discussion, I want to get into the different brands of hardware wallets and the different trade-offs. And I think a good starting point, I know I told you we're going to speak about, you know, four or five other ones, but one of them I'd like to bring up as an example of a hardware wallet that's absolutely shat the bed recently is Ledger. Yeah, maybe explain to people what Ledger did and how they shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, so people think only recently Ledger became a shitty hardware wallet, but I think it's kind of always been one because of its closed source. So when your Bitcoin is at risk, well, when a wallet is storing your Bitcoin, you want that code to be open and available so you know what's going on with your Bitcoin and how they are securing it. Where Ledger is closed source, it's kind of like a black box you can't see inside. You don't know what it's actually doing with your coins. And yeah, I just wouldn't be comfortable storing my Bitcoin in a wallet that you don't know what's going on with it. Recently, Ledger did this new service. What's it called? Ledger Recovery, I think. Yeah, so they basically take your seed off the device and share it between a few different parties. And if you lose access to your Ledger, those parties can come together to regain access to your coins. So Ledger's basically asking you to pay them so that they can put your seed, well, store your seed with third parties, which is against the ethos of Bitcoin. And another thing I read is that if Ledger gets subpoenaed by a government and they say, we need this user's keys, we need this user's Bitcoin, Ledger can now hand over your keys basically because it's stored with a whole bunch of different parties. So yeah, Ledger definitely to be avoided 100%.
And you know that the saddest thing about Ledger is that they had such a massive market lead. They were like the first guys to make really big commercially available hardware wallets. And they kind of, the closed source thing was something that people could kind of get past. You know, they were like, yeah, it sucks, but you know, Ledger's been around for a while and they haven't scammed anyone yet. But then they had that massive data hack where they lost a bunch of their customers' home address records. And then a bunch of their customers were being extorted by people who bought that on the black markets, bought that data set. And they now had everyone's address. And incidentally, that's why at my company, Bitcoin Only, we don't ship to your home. We ship using Pargo, which goes to like a shop that you choose and you go pick it up, because I don't want your home address on my records. Because if my store gets hacked, then you're at risk because people know you have Bitcoin because you bought a Bitcoin hardware wallet. And that's exactly what happened to Ledger. And then they came up with this Ledger Recover thing, which, like you say, the real risk is not so much Ledger conspiring to steal your Bitcoin. It's them handing it over to three-letter security agencies and them just being able to take your Bitcoin. So that's a real risk. So we wrote a newsletter earlier in the year. Myself, my partner Brandon at Bitvice wrote this newsletter about why Ledger is kind of... If anyone's using a Ledger presently and you haven't upgraded your firmware, you're still okay. But it's those firmware updates. And if on the older devices, it's not such a risk like the Nano S, but the later ones, it is a risk. But sooner or later, everyone's going to have to update their firmware. And then you're running that firmware that's got the Ledger Recover on it. So to me personally, if you're using your Ledger in a multi-sig, that's probably okay. But if you're using your Ledger as a single sig hardware wallet, nah, time to move on. It's not really a risk just yet, but it will become bigger and bigger one in the future. So yeah, Ledger absolutely shot themselves in the foot there. Sucks for them. And it happened quickly, huh? Like, I don't know what their sales are looking like now, but I can imagine they're probably a fraction of what they were, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of these crypto users, though, who don't really know what's going on behind the scenes are just still going to stick with Ledger because they don't actually understand what is going on with Ledger and what Ledger's doing. They don't really care about the security of it all. They just need somewhere to store their shitcoin NFTs, you know, and Ledger's the most famous option.
Yeah. Well, lucky for them, those NFTs are worth zero now, so they don't really have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. And if it's not worth zero now, it will be in the future. So if Ledger writes they're stealing nothing.
I don't know how many NFTs are worth anything anymore, but there can't be many that are still worth something because that entire scam bubble is completely popped. And it's not like people like us weren't telling people about NFTs a year and a half, 2 years ago. Like, guys, this is completely a scam. Like, they're like, it's like the new ICO. These things are all going to go to zero. Anyway, here we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is why you and I advocate for Bitcoin only hardware wallets. And the biggest reason for this for me is that you don't then have to be worried about your dev team who are busy working on these hardware wallets to have to focus their time and energy on different blockchains with different security protocols and with different, you know, everything. Every coin is different. Well, not every coin. Some of them are complete copies of each other, but most of them are different, and they have, you know, different rules running them, and therefore the devs need to dedicate more time to those coins. So if your hardware wallet is supporting 1,000 coins, the devs in the background have to split their time between those. So you're not going to get the best security outcomes. Whereas if you're getting a wallet that's Bitcoin only, you can be assured that the devs working on that are focusing all their time and effort on securing Bitcoin alone. And then you get a more secure wallet. And the other reason for going Bitcoin only is that you end up with people who value Bitcoin's ethos, running the companies there and making design decisions based on that alone. So you don't end up with shitcoin ethics, you know, ways and means to hand over your private keys to the three-letter security agencies, for example. So yeah, and that's why I want to discuss Bitcoin only wallets on this podcast with you. And I think let's start with what I perceive to be the big boss at the moment, the most secure one, also one of the most expensive, but the cold card. What's your take on the cold card?
Yeah, I think the cold card is a very solid wallet. It feels very ultra secure. They've done a great job. Fully air gapped. Now with a Mark IV, they've got dual vendor secure elements, so you don't need to trust one secure element. There's actually three chips involved, the two secure elements and then the one MCU. So yeah, cold card's a proper device. There's pros and cons to everything, of course. And I think the con with cold card is that they are no longer open source, free and open source. Now they are source viewable. So you can still see the code that is running on your cold card, but other companies can't copy it and use it, basically. And that disincentivizes people to look at this code because you can't really do anything with it. If a company has fully open source code, other developers can use that code, which is a great incentive to, you know, take a look at it and see how you can use it yourself if you're a business. So there's a lot more eyes on free and open source code. And because cold card has made theirs only source viewable, I think that's quite one of the downsides of cold card.
So within the Bitcoin community, I would assume that there's a bunch of people now calling the cold card team shitcoiners, etc., because they've it's no longer open source, the code base. So you can view it, like you say, but you can't compile it and run it. And I would imagine they made that decision because they want to protect their IP to a degree that they can produce their cold card and sell them at the price they sell them at, and that someone else can't produce a similar device and undercut them. I'd imagine that's probably what's going on. Because cold card, they do a lot of their, I don't know if they do all of their manufacturing, but maybe the assembly and their team sits in Canada, where obviously they've got high cost of labor, high cost of living, et cetera, whereas if someone in China, you know, started producing fold cards, for example, then it'll be, you know, a lot cheaper for them to do. So I understand why they've gone that route. But obviously now the downside is, like you say, is that you have less eyes on the code because there's less people actually trying to implement it commercially. So it is a double-edged sword. The other thing about cold card though is the price. I mean, I retail a cold card Mark IV for 5,100 Rand. And the margins on that are thin because I just can't really charge more than that for it because people aren't going to buy it. Like, not in South Africa. They're just really expensive. And that is because shipping and taxes and import duties and all that stuff adds up, obviously. So that is a downside to them. But if you are securing a large amount of Bitcoin, or you're securing Bitcoin that's grown in value, then 5,000 Rand on your security might not be a big deal, you know, if you support it. Yeah. So that's a personal decision to make. But I would say that they probably are the most secure out of the wallets thus far. But yeah, like you said, open source thing. Cool. What's your, how do you find user experience on a cold card compared to some of the other ones though?
Yeah. So I will agree with you there. Cold card is one of the pricier ones, but probably one of the most secure there that's out there, with the downside being it's source viewable. The usability, I think if you really want to use the cold card to its full capabilities, if you want to use it to it's full using all the security measures. It isn't the easiest to use, of course. With the air gap, you need to, it's best used with a wallet like Sparrow, which in itself is quite complicated for new users. Air gap SD operation, signing offline, then moving the signed transaction back online. It's not the easiest. But ColdCard does allow you to plug in the device and use it non-air-gapped, I believe. I don't really know because I've never used it like that. I only use it air-gapped.
It kind of defeats the point. Like, why would you spend so much money and then not use it air-gapped?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, yeah, no, they do allow you. Sorry?
No, they do allow you to use it in non-air-gapped mode, that plug-in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, then like you said, it defeats the 5,100 rand price point. For newer users, I think it definitely is quite hard to use. It's not the most usable device if you want to use it like you should use it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the thing. Like, the maybe we should just explain air gap mode before we get into detail about how why you should use it. But yeah, do you mind just telling people what air gap is?
Yeah, so basically the ColdCard, like I mentioned earlier, how hardware wallets work, is it generates a private and a public key. And the public key is used to receive Bitcoin, and that can be put online because you can't spend Bitcoin with the public key. No one can steal your coins if they have that. So the public key is put online, and you use that to receive Bitcoin. So let's say I receive one Bitcoin. It's quite a lot, but just for example, one Bitcoin. And now I need to send it. With ColdCard, you use the public key to build that transaction. Then basically on your computer, you're saying, I want to spend this Bitcoin, send it to this person. Then you take that transaction in a file, a .psbt file, and you put it on an SD card. So here's my SD card. You take it completely offline. You separate it from the computer and you put it on the ColdCard. And then ColdCard takes your private key and signs that transaction completely offline. Now, the reason it's air-gapped is because the ColdCard is never plugged in to the device, like a Ledger or a Trezor would be. Never plugged in. Everything is air-gapped. So there's air, you know, between the two devices. There's no cables or nothing has to be plugged in. So the SD card, you plug it in the ColdCard. It signs it offline. No strings attached. Then you pull out the SD card and put it back on the computer. And now that SD card has the signed transaction. So you can now broadcast the signed transaction that's sitting on the SD card. And yeah, that is where you can now send the Bitcoin because it's been delivered to the Bitcoin network, basically.
Right. So in a nutshell, air gap means that you can sign a transaction. That creating a transaction and signing transaction are like separated by a gap of air. They're not done on the same device. So you create a transaction on a wallet in your computer. You then save it to your SD card, put it in your ColdCard, sign it, take the SD card out, back in your computer, broadcast it to the internet, transaction done. So there's various permutations around air gapped. So with ColdCard, they started out, I think they're the first guys to implement this properly. I might be wrong, but in the earlier designs, I think they were the first guys to do it using the SD card. But now there's different methods of doing that using QR codes, for example, and the new Mark IV ColdCard, yeah, as a seed signer. The new Mark IV ColdCard actually has NFC on it. So you can tap it onto a device. So let's say you've got a wallet on your phone, you've got a watch-only wallet, and that's where you create the transactions broadcast to the internet. You create it there, and then through NFC, which your phone has got, near-field communication, you can tap it onto your cold card and actually broadcast the signed transaction that way. While the PSBT to the cold card, sign it, tap it back again, send the signed transaction, then broadcast it that way. So they are the usability on AirGap is getting much better. You know, in the last few years, I've seen it get a lot better. But that being said, once you're familiar with the SD card process on the Mark III cold card, for example, which is the one I've got, it's super easy. You know, once you've done it once, it's really easy to do. It just gives you great peace of mind, you know. And what I love about the team at ColdCard over at CoinKite is these guys take this stuff seriously. Like the cold power adapter, for example. Like you can run your your cold card offer 9-volt, one of those rectangular 9-volt batteries. I know you and I have both got the cold power adapters. And it's a little adapter they've built that plugs onto the top of a 9-volt battery. And then using a power-only cable that cold card manufactures as well, so no data can travel, it powers the device. You know that this thing is not, there's no ways this thing is generating or passing on information that shouldn't be passed on. So yeah, this is what I love about the cold card. But that being said, you just showed the seed signer. Let's move on to the seed signer. Do you mind giving us a bit of an overview of what that is?
Yeah. So the reason I showed the seed signer when you were talking about different ways to air gap is that the seed signer uses QR codes rather than an SD card to communicate information. So your seed signer has a little camera at the back and it's got a little screen that can display QRs. And basically seed signer communicates info through QR code. It signs offline. And then your sign transaction is again in the form of QR code. So that's a different approach to air gap. And what the seed signer actually is it's hardware you buy yourself. So this screen is just bought from a local computer store, the camera as well. And then there's a Raspberry Pi board inside. This is all bought from local computer stores here in South Africa. I didn't have to buy this from any hardware wallet manufacturer like ColdCard or Blockstream Jade or whatever it may be. So I view seed signer as a truly sovereign signing device or a hardware wallet, whatever word you want to give to it, because you do everything yourself. You know, there's no trust involved here. So a fully sovereign signing device, and the people at seed signer are really passionate about this as well. They've put a lot of effort into this. The guy was, the seed signer guy, what was it? Forensics. He was in forensics. So he knows a lot about these different secure elements and how the three-letter agencies can gain access to your coins and other things like that. So he wanted to make a device that didn't store any seed phrases. So the seed signer creates a seed. And then as soon as you cut the power on your seed signer, it wipes the seed clean. There's no seed saved on this device. And yeah, that's what's cool about seed signer. It's stateless. It's truly sovereign. You know, you build this thing yourself. The software that they deliver is fully free and open source, so it can be viewed. But like I mentioned earlier, there's always pros and cons to everything. So the con with the seed signer is that their Raspberry Pi board is also kind of like a black box. It's not open source and it's not built specifically for Bitcoin. So the Raspberry Pi isn't built for Bitcoin. So it lacks some of the security features that a cold card or a Blockstream Jade might have. For example, the cold card, you can't load malicious software on there that wasn't created by the cold card developers because it's got certain signatures. Because this is just general purpose hardware, I can boot anything on here, even if it's designed to steal my Bitcoin. So this SD card, you want to make sure you verify the software that goes on here. And you want to make sure that it's always your SD card you're plugging in, and not an SD card from an evil maid, like an evil maid attack. So yeah, that's basically seed signer. It's also fully air gapped, like we said earlier, with the QR codes. And got a lot of cool features as well.
Yeah. So there's a bit to unpack there about the seed signer. So let's start at the back with the SD card. So that's the biggest risk, right? Is that someone downloads a malicious or creates a malicious version of the software that you're running. So the software you run on your seed signer lives on that SD card, right? So
yeah.
Someone gets the same SD card, it looks exactly the same. They put the malicious software on there. They have access to your seed signer device, which you might not store that securely because it doesn't actually hold your private keys in it. So you're like, whatever, it can just live somewhere not hyper secure, unlike your other hardware wallets. And then they swap out your SD cards and you get some malicious code running on there, which then next time you scan your private keys, it does something nefarious, sends it to a different address or whatever. So that is the one risk with a seed signer. And like you said, the evil maid attack. It is quite a stretch that someone would pull that off, but obviously a highly motivated individual who's targeting you specifically, et cetera, can pull that off. But there's definitely ways you can defend against that. what I like about the seed signer is, as you mentioned, it's stateless. And what stateless means is that it doesn't store your private keys on the device. Your private keys are actually held on a QR code. And what seed signer does is you can generate your keys on there using dice rolls or using there's various ways to do it, but it then creates a QR code for you that you then transcribe onto a piece of paper, a template, QR code template. And it takes your 12 or 24 words and converts them into a QR code. And if you've got one lying around behind you, I don't have mine because I store it securely.
I thought I did, but I don't. I usually have them lying around here, but no.
But look, if you've seen one QR code, you've seen them all. So it looks like a QR code. And what you do is you power up your seed signer. So you plug it into a power source, a battery bank. Works great, especially with a power-only cable. And then you load your private key into the seed signer by scanning your QR code. And that QR code is taking your 12 words and converting it into a QR code. Then you scan that, it loads your private keys in, and now your device is ready to sign. So then you can create your transaction on Sparrow, on Blue Wallet, or whatever wallet you're using. Generate your partially signed Bitcoin transaction, your PSBT. Scan that with your seed signer because it's got like a little camera on the back. It then imports that information from the transaction onto your seed signer. You can then say, cool, approve this transaction. You can see all the outputs, approve the transaction, and it then generates a QR code on the screen, which you then show back to your phone or your PC or wherever you've got your watch-only wallet living to then broadcast the approved transaction on. So it's stateless, and it uses the fully air-gapped and stateless, which is great. Like you say, the Raspberry Pi Zero issue, that can be a bit of a supply chain issue because a few months back, about a year ago, there was a big Raspberry Pi shortage. So we couldn't get hold of any Pi Zero boards. So we couldn't actually manufacture our own seed signers, which was quite annoying. And then you have to buy a different Pi, which has a Wi-Fi board on it, for example, and you have to like get rid of that because you don't want your device being able to connect to Wi-Fi. The other big issue with the seed signer, and this might not be an issue for some people, but it is for most normies, is that it's DIY. You got to go and build it yourself. And that's not everyone's cup of tea. But if you people like Cole and I, great. It's a cool thing. I should go on as a wedding gift. Shout out to my boy who gave me one as a wedding gift, my wife and I. Great wedding gift. So yeah, very, very cool. Got us a kit and we just put it together. The other thing that I don't like about the seed signer is it doesn't come with a... Well, it doesn't come. The designs don't have a battery included. So you got to plug it into a power supply, same as the cold card. That's quite annoying. So you have to have like a separate power supply for the thing, or you have to plug it into your computer, which is often how you're doing it. If you're using Sparrow, which then, you know, creates security risks if you don't have a power only cable. So you use like a, cause everyone's got those like old school USB cables lying around for the old phones, old Samsung devices. But that's a data and power cable. And then, you know, if your computer's got malicious software on it, which you have to assume it does, you could run into issues there. So,
There's, I mentioned there's no secure elements on here as well, or anything to make sure that your seed can't be extracted if it's loaded. So plugging it into the computer, I think this device specifically, you should avoid plugging it into the computer.
100%.
Also with the Raspberry Pi board being closed, I'm not sure if this is FUD or not. I've seen a few other cold card manufacturers say that you can't really verify that the seed has been wiped because the board is closed. You don't know what the board is doing behind the scenes. So although when you cut the power, when you load it back up, the seed is gone. We don't know if the board actually has wiped that. So that's another problem. But most of these problems we talk about really for all these hardware wallets are they really going to happen? is something like that really like the evil made attack? You're better just getting your coins off an exchange and on a device like this or even on a software wallet.
Yeah, you're right. Like this is worth reiterating, like I said in the beginning. These problems we're discussing here are such multiple orders of magnitude lower than leaving your coins on an exchange. You know, like we're talking about like fringe cases here about like, your board might be compromised or like the maid could swap out your SD card. You know, your coins being stolen off an exchange is far, far, far more likely. The seed signer for me personally is great. And what I really like about it is because it's totally open source, and like I said, the guy from Seed Signer, there isn't really, I mean, there is the founder guy who started it, but now it's become whole. It's a whole open source project. So there's a bunch of contributors. It's like Bitcoin. It's become this whole other animal that's like taken on a life of its own. And the rate at which firmware updates come out is quite fast. So like there's always new updates happening. And the user interface on the seed signer is always improving. So one of my favorite wallets, I love it. And just the way it operates by the QR codes is great. Then shall we move on to the next one, which is the Blockstream Jade, relatively new arrival on the hardware wallet scene. It's been around for like 2 years or so, but gaining quite a bit of traction recently. And I think the reason why it's gaining traction is can be used stateless, it's air gapped, you know, it uses QR codes, but it is way, way, way cheaper than the competitors. Specifically, even cheaper than the seed signer, which is built from like components you can find, you know, at your local hardware store. So even once you've imported it and bought it from a retailer like Bitcoin only, it's still cheaper, which is a very compelling, it's very compelling for most people that it's so affordable. But my question to you is, have they made security trade-offs to make it that cheap? Have they managed to kind of like attain Nirvana here? We've got a secure device that is also still cost-effective.
Yeah, so I do have a Blockstream Jade, but every time I open a new hardware device, I want to film a video on it. And I haven't filmed a video yet, so I haven't opened it. So I don't actually have experience with it. I've seen videos about it and I've read through all the docs. So I know more or less what it's all about. So the Jade is fully open source, which is always good. But with that being fully open source, it comes with downsides the way they've done it. So they have a virtual secure element, and I believe you need to use Blockstream Green, which is their wallet, to access that and to do upgrade your Blockstream Jade. So it's not, they say it's air-gapped, but I wouldn't really call it fully air-gapped, from seed generation to updates to signing. I wouldn't consider it fully air-gapped, and there are some downsides to using a virtual secure element because it uses their whole server, the Blockstream server. So I think it's a super secure device at a great price. I mean, again, these things we're talking about are, it's very unlikely this is what's going to compromise you. What's more likely to compromise you is you losing your seed phrase or keeping your Bitcoin in an exchange. But yeah, that's one of the downsides, is that virtual secure element, and it's not fully air-gapped. And there are ways around that. You can use the Jade air gap, I believe, and stateless. You can generate the seed without connecting to anything, and it wipes the seed. But again, to push updates, you have to connect to Blockstream Green via Bluetooth. So yeah, I think it's a super secure device at a great price, but it does come with its trade-offs.
Yeah, so I've used the Jade quite a bit now, and it has become so I've got quite a few different hardware wallets. I've played around with a bunch of different ones. And from my perspective, this is the most user-friendly wallet I've come across so far. And there's ways around the virtual secure element. And this is a pro and a con, the virtual secure element, because it's a pro because you don't have to have a secure element on the device. And that's the expensive part. That is why the cold card is so expensive, because they got two secure elements on the device. And that's literally what makes your device so expensive. So with a server, you build it once and then everyone can connect to it. So what it also means though is that people can't hack your device. It's like the seed signer. If you use it in a stateless air gap mode, you don't store your private keys on the device. It's just a key. It's just a signing device. You actually, because how most hardware wallets work is your private keys live on the hardware wallet, and then it gets encrypted by a PIN. So this confuses a lot of first-time users, because you've got this device, it's got a PIN, you've got your 12 words, the seed words, and you got a passphrase. There's like three things you got to keep track of. And especially for first-time users, you're like, what do these things mean? I don't know. What is the difference between the PIN, the passphrase, and the seed words? So the way I recommend people use the Jade is the same way you'd use a seed signer. You create your seed words on there. And I do agree with you. You've got to download the latest version of the firmware to run it in the latest stateless air gap mode. So there is a issue there because there's a dependency on Blockstream. However, they've open sourced the software. So what I would imagine they're going to do is probably start pushing this through GitHub so you're able to download your latest versions from GitHub or from different sources. That's probably what I reckon they're doing. This is speculation on my part, but I would imagine that would be the next move in security from their side. Adam Back from Blockstream knows what he's doing. So hopefully that's the route they go. But you use the device in a way that you create the QR code from your seed words. You have that QR code, and then you add a passphrase to your seed words. So then every time you want to use your Jade, you just scan your QR code, you put in your passphrase, which you keep in your head, and then, you know, Bob's your uncle. You can carry on and sign the transaction. What I really like about that is there is no secure element to hack on the device. The device, I don't know if it bricks itself like a cold card does if people try to, you know, to put in a passphrase too many times. I'm not quite sure about that. But yeah, I think from what I've seen, the trade-offs for me are pretty good. If you use it in air gap mode and stateless mode, it's kind of got a better interface than the seed signer. You don't have to build it yourself, and it's cheaper. And you get all the same guarantees with a bit more security. And this is a really interesting thing about the Jade. There's the dependency on downloading the firmware from Blockstream Green, which is that kind of companion wallet that goes with it. But they've spent so much time making the wallet, the Jade, compatible with other software wallets for watch-only wallets that they actually haven't got watch-only functionality on Green for the Jade yet. It doesn't really work. So that kind of was interesting for me. I found that out this week. I was like, so I can't actually use the Blockstream Green with my Jade as a watch-only wallet because they haven't finished building that yet. Whereas it works really well in watch-only mode with Blue Wallet, for example, or you can use it with Sparrow. That works fine. So I like where Blockstream is going with this. And I think as they keep iterating on the product, it's going to get better and better. So for me personally, this is a really great, really great wallet to get started on. And it's also got multi-sig support. And one of the things they do is that the biggest drawback to multi-sig for me is your wallet coordination file, because you got to store that somewhere securely. If you lose your keys, you know, you can reinstate the wallet from the config file, the coordination file. But that needs to be stored somewhere. And it's a digital file, so often people store it on a flash disk. Problem with flash disks is they've got about a 5-year lifespan. Then they start getting squirrely. So you could end up storing, you know, you store your multi-sig coordination file on a flash in your safe at home, and then 10 years later you need to use it, and then that flash is corrupted, and then you're screwed. So or the flash gets stolen or lost or whatever. So what the Jade does, it actually stores your coordination file on the device, which is quite handy. If you're using three different Jades, or one Jade and two other different types of wallets, you can store the multi-sig coordination file on the actual Jade itself while using it in stateless mode. So it remembers the multi-sig file, but nothing else. So that's quite handy. But multi-sig, I used to be a massive proponent of multi-sig, and now I'm more circumspect about it in that there's a lot of room for error where you can mess things up yourself. And that's the biggest risk in hardware wallets here, is like just overcomplicating things. And with multi-sig, it gets complicated. So it's great for corporate. You know, we've got to have like directors each holding a key. That makes sense. We've got like fiduciary responsibility, etc. But for your average Joe, I actually have come back around to thinking that a single sig with a passphrase is just a better option, because there's less way for you to stuff it up. But yeah, I don't know. We're kind of getting off track here. This discussion isn't really meant to be about multi-sig. But yeah, from my perspective, Jade, great wallet. Works pretty well and is very affordable.
Yeah. One thing also I forgot to mention is because there's no secure element, that's what allows them to fully open source the device. So a lot of these devices with secure elements, the secure elements are always closed source, because a secure element manufacturer that produces open source chips just doesn't exist. So all these secure elements are closed black boxes. We don't know what's going on inside of them. And that's why companies like Coldcard have done this dual architecture where there's two secure elements from different vendors. So it's dual vendor chips. And that's one of the ways we hedge against that risk of one of them being backdoored. So no secure element means it can be fully open source. There's not a single thing in there that is closed, which is great from Blockstream.
Yeah, no, they've done well. They really have done well. Okay, and then the next one I want to talk about is the Bitbox. So Bitbox is made by Shift Crypto, right? They're based out of Switzerland. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so Bitbox isn't that well known compared to the other wallets like ColdCard. I've looked into it recently. I've never actually used one, so I'm not an expert on this. But it has quite an impressive security model. They pioneered that dual chip architecture I was just talking about. So they have a secure element that stores your seed encrypted, and it needs a few things to unlock that seed. So yeah, they pioneered that dual chip technology, and three secrets needed to access that. And for a thief to gain access to the wallet, they need a random secret that's on that secure chip. Then they need a random secret in the MCU, in the microcontroller, and then your PIN as well. So it's got quite an impressive security model. It's fully open source, except for the secure element chip. Like I mentioned earlier, all of these secure elements are closed source, and it uses it in a trustless way, similar to how ColdCard does it. And again, there's no pros without cons. The con with this device is that you actually plug it in. You can't use it air-gapped. It's plugged right into the computer, and there's no SD operation like with ColdCard or QR signing offline. It's plugged in directly, and that is the downside of the Bitbox. It's also got there's a Bitcoin-only version and a shitcoin version, and the problem is the developers do have to put some time into that shitcoin version. So they might not be focusing on securing the Bitcoin as much and adding cool new features to that Bitcoin-only device. So yeah, that is the Bitbox.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a very big one for me, is the developers and their time. Because if you're focusing on shitcoins, there's like the whole moral side of that, which we've hashed over many times. But the other thing is that like those shitcoin chains, because they were built so quickly and like they don't have the same ethos of Bitcoin of like move slowly. Theirs is more the VC Silicon Valley model of like move fast and break things, which means things break all the time, and the developers have to spend a bunch of time bug fixing shitcoin chains and their security models. And like then because Bitcoin is so slow moving, they probably end up spending no time or very little time on the Bitcoin side of things. And then like you say, you just don't get new features rolling out that quickly, which even though if they could release a new device where they spend a lot of time building this device and the kind of firmware that goes with it, what is that going to look like in 5 years time or in 3 years time? You know, are they going to keep supporting it, or are they going to keep chasing off the shitcoins? And you know, they could spend 100 hours on a single shitcoin building out the security model there, and then that shitcoin doesn't exist in 3 or 4 years time anymore. Like it's literally gone to zero, and then all that time was wasted. Whereas we know Bitcoin's still going to be around in 3 to 4 years, or at least there's a much higher probability than of it being around than some random shitcoin.
Well, I'll say as well, I get the feeling these guys they do have a shitcoin device. They seem very pro Bitcoin. They're not really pushing, oh, you can store your NFTs on our device, guys. They push a lot of the Bitcoin stuff. This is also from them. They sell these little Bitcoin white papers. I don't think they're as bad as something like a Ledger, who's like, hey, this is how you store your shitty peep unu, whatever
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Use the Ledger. So yeah,
that is a fair point. I definitely agree with you. They do seem like they are legit. But once again, like don't trust verify, like having to, if you have to trust people in the space, so you get wrecked, you know, like trustless is the way to go. So based on that and based on what we discussed, what is your favorite wallet out of all of the ones we chatted about?
Yeah, it's hard to say with all these pros and cons. I think at the end of the day, I mostly use cold card with, so 24 words and a passphrase and geographically distributed. So cold card is probably my favorite device. I haven't used the Blockstream Jade yet, but I think for its price, that would be something I'd highly recommend to people who are new to the space and want a nice entry level wallet. And Bitbox has really impressed me as well. It's quite an impressive device with some good security features on there. And SeedSigner, it will always have a special place, of course, because of it's just such a cool thing and what they've done with the being fully like a fully sovereign device where you don't really need to trust any hardware wallet manufacturer. But yeah, all these cool devices at the end, I think cold card wins for my personal stash. At the end of the day, there's one device that stores your personal stash, and I like the cold card. Geographically distributed, of course, with the passphrase.
Yeah. Yeah. So the passphrase thing is super important. I think it's basically essential. If you're running a single sig wallet, I think it's essential that you have a passphrase on there. And because it just gives you, like, first off, you should always have backups of your seed words, right? Multiple backups. And those backups shouldn't be on paper. They should be ideally etched into steel. You know, at Bitcoin Only, we sell these kits that allow you to create steel backups quite cheaply. But those backups, if they get found, if someone finds those 12 words and you don't have a passphrase, they can just steal your Bitcoin, right? And so this is why a passphrase is so important. Because you can just then not have to worry about your seed words being found by someone, because you've got an additional layer of security on top there. What would you recommend to people about how they secure their backups?
I like Steel as well. So my favorite method is 24 or 12 words plus a passphrase. Multi-sig, I think there's a few ways you can shoot yourself in the foot, and it's a bit unnecessary for most people. I mean, if you've got $1,000 in Bitcoin and you're storing a multi-sig, it's not a good idea, really. I like Steel as well. Steel plate for your first 12 or 24 words, then your extra passphrase in a steel plate as well, in a different place, of course. So if you can preferably put it somewhere where if an attacker comes to your house, they can't access both keys. So for example, if someone comes to my house, they can't unlock everything because not all the keys are here. So that's how I recommend. And both are on steel. So yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone wondering how to do the steel backup, so this little bad boy over here, this is also an open source project called BlockMit. And this is basically like a plastic jig that you 3D print. Well, you don't have to 3D print. You can buy these online from Bitcoin Only or Max over at Electric Eel. This sells them. He actually prints them for us. But you put in a 25 mil steel washer in there that seats in there. And then using this jig, you can use number punches and letter punches to bang your word onto the washer. So you can, for example, here put number one. And then let's say your first word is whatever, power. You can bang that in there, power, using the marks, the notches on here to like move it around. You can get a nice neat washer with a word on it. And then the string of washers goes onto a bolt. You got all 12 nice and neatly held in place with a butterfly nut. And that's your 12 word backup. And one of the things you put me onto, which in the beginning I was like, people aren't going to use them. But after having used them myself, now I'm like, I'm sold on the idea, are those tamper evident plastic bags. So you put your backups inside a plastic bag that shows when it's been opened. So you can see if someone's actually found your seed words and had to squeeze at them, which just gives you, you know that, okay, these things have been compromised. Even though I've got a passphrase protecting it, you can then move your Bitcoin onto a whole new seed. And it just gives you another layer of additional security. It's also great if you need to distribute those. So I set up a corporate client the other day with their Bitcoin security solution for their company. And we had to distribute keys amongst directors. And it's a great way to do it for directors who don't want to be involved in like day-to-day operation of the Bitcoin wallet, but you can just give them a tamper-evident plastic bag with an envelope inside it that's got their seed words written down in there. You're like, hey, if there's an emergency and we lose access to our wallets, we're just going to come get this bag from you so we can, reinstate the wallets. And then you can, even if it's sat with them for 20 years, you can easily see if someone's actually got access to their seed words or not because the tamper-evident bag is there. So what I recommend to anyone if you are using a hardware wallet, is you should also make steel backups of your seed words. Super important. Because if they're sitting on paper, moths, enemy number one, they're gonna eat your paper. And then fires, flood damage, you know, ink fades, all kinds of things. So it's just much better to hammer than once to steal. And then, you know, you can sleep well at night and you can get super creative with how you store those seed words. What do you think is a good way for people to store those steel backups once they've got them?
I don't know. I think it depends on your circumstances. I don't really know, to be honest. I think everyone's got their own little cool places where they can sneak them around. Having a external safety deposit box is a good idea if you want to geographically distribute it. But for storing it, I think it's really up to you. Just be creative, look around your house, think, where would no one look for this? And where would no one find this? And chuck it there in a tamper-evident bag. So if somebody does find that, you'll know. And another good tip is, if it's in steel in a tamper-evident bag, wrap it in something where they can't see it. So with your washers, you can't see it just by observing it, like from you can't see it like this. But if you've got a plate where you've punched your words in, maybe wrap it in, I don't know, toilet paper or something, then put it in the tamper-evident bag. So if someone...
Put it in an envelope.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not toilet paper, but yes.
I've just got a box of tissues here, so I'm looking at that, thinking, wrap it in that. So that if someone does get your tamper-evident bag, they don't have to open it to see your words. Exactly. Just make sure it's wrapped up so that they can't do that.
Exactly. So one of the things I'm working on at the moment, you know those rodent bait stations that like keep rat poison in, like at industrial locations, like if you've ever been to a factory or like public spaces, is like those black rodent stations with holes in either ends where the rats come in and eat the bait. Perfect place. So you, I'm looking at hosting those on the online store soon, where you can buy one of those and then keep that in the back of your like kitchen cupboard, for example. Anyone breaks into your house, they see that, no one's sticking their hand inside that thing. Like no one wants to touch poison. But it's not poison, it's your seeds. So you can stick those in a tamper-evident bag inside something like that. Another great one is put it in your freezer. You know, this guy got from the Gold Bugs. They would say put it in your gold in an ice cream container in your freezer and just write dog food on it. You know, someone breaks into your house, they're not stealing dog food. Another great place. But my personal favorite, look, the time-honored tradition of the pirates cannot be faulted. You bury that shit in a yogurt tub in your backyard. No one's finding that. You know, like when you need them, which is hopefully not often, you can go and dig it up and you got your seed words because they're on steel. So there's many ways to skin the cat. What I would say, though, is putting it in your safe at home is probably a bad idea. Like that's a honeypot. Like if someone breaks into your house, like they're like, where's the safe? Take me to the safe. Like, don't store your things that are really valuable in your safe. Like, leave some breadcrumbs there, some like trolls that people would take as a like diversion, you know. But don't leave your Bitcoin seeds there. What you could leave there is your QR code to the seed, because anyone breaking into your house probably does, unless they watch this video, probably doesn't know what the QR code is. And once again, if it's secured with a passphrase, worthless to them, and they don't know what the passphrase is. So many ways around this. But Cole, we have gone over time here. I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much for your time. This has been a great discussion. And I think if anyone gets a takeaway from this is, go get yourself a hardware wallet, and use it in stateless mode and use an air gap mode. My personal favorite out of the lot is I love the cold card. I think it's great, but to be honest, I think I'm a biggest fan of the seed signer and the Jade because of that stateless air gap mode. I think it really, because it just means that you don't have to worry about the actual physical device getting stolen and getting hacked. And I know cold card protects against that with can brick itself and all that, but there's if for what you're paying, I think you can get a much more affordable device to achieve that same goal. All right, cool. Yeah. On that, thank you very much. Tell me, if people want to find you and find your videos and content you're producing, where can they find your content?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at ColeTU. YouTube is Southern Bitcoiner, and I have a website, southernbitcoiner.com, that puts, I put all my video guides on there, and they're stepped. So if you wanted cold card guides, click on the cold card guides. And then step one is setup. Step two, how to add a passphrase. Step three, how to use dice rolls, something like that. So yeah, that's where you can find me. And thank you for having me. It was good to chat about hardware wallets. And remember that any hardware wallet is safer than the exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I will put all the links down below in the video. Yeah, Cole, thank you so much, bro. We'll catch up again soon. And love your work, man. You're doing a great service to the Bitcoin community. Keep it up.
Thank you. Cheers, Ricky.
Later. Cheers, man.